Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2021. I'm now here with Elder. Elder is a YouTuber. He's also got a channel on Odyssey. Elder, could you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Hi, yes, of course. So I was born in South Africa into an Italian village. My father was Rhodesian, and he had to leave Rhodesia because of, you know, the obvious, and then settled in South Africa. And after the war, a lot of Italians from a village in the northeast of Italy ventured out into South Africa to create a mirror village to the one that they came from. And so families sort of went over there and created this little village, and I was born into that village. So I'm half Italian and half Rhodesian. My grandfather was a Welshman, and he was drowned, murdered in the sea somewhere. So I guess that's where my abrasiveness comes from. I grew up through the 1995 transition, you know, from South Africa as I knew it, the most beautiful jewel of the world, in my belief, a childhood where I was free to roam and do everything that I could imagine as a young child, you know, climbing trees, swimming in the ocean, exploring the forests and valleys of my area without a care in the world. And then we became the Rainbow Nation. In your previous stream, when you were chatting to Computing Forever, you mentioned that in 1995, you couldn't imagine what was planned, but it struck me just then when you said that I was, in fact, you know, being born into the new Rainbow Nation. So perhaps in 1995, they didn't know exactly what was coming. The transition into the new South Africa, whichever kind of South African you speak to, they'll all tell you the same stories, stories of fear of rape, stories of being persecuted, stories of being forced into isolation, as it were, not much different than what we're in now. You know, we were in gated communities doing everything that we could just to be able to survive. I remember not being comfortable letting my girlfriend walk to the corner shop without me being present and armed as well. And that transition happened within 5 years.
This is the transition into the Rainbow Nation.
Yes.
I mean, it's important to make this distinction because, well, to make this point, because obviously South Africa is what was reviled, I guess, obviously in the 80s and 90s, early 90s, but I guess that goes back quite a lot further than that. And the Rainbow Nation is supposed to be something happy and open-minded, joyful, in the same way that today the same symbol is associated with being joyful and open-minded and happy and so on. But some people detect a totalitarian and miserable, life-hating, mean-spirited thing underneath that. And, well, that was the case in a very real sense with South Africa when it became the Rainbow Nation. It wasn't a happy place. So please go on.
No, not at all. And it's worth investigating that a little bit. So when you look at what happened, right, like you rightly say, the South Africa was reviled for apartheid. But let's try and understand what that term means. It doesn't mean that one race or is any better or less than the other. It just means separate developments. So like my Italian village, we were free to pursue our own interests and grow our families and take care of ourselves, and our neighbors who were of a different race were free to do the same. And we had our homes secure for us so that we could focus on the multi-generational plan, which I suspect is where all this leftist attack is pointed. You know, we're currently sitting in a society that consumes the future for the comfort of the present. And that future is the sacrifice, is the trial that people have to be paid, you know, the initiation into this leftist view. And same as in South Africa, you know, they tried and tried and tried. The Swedes supplied the ANC with detonators, and Mandela himself was trained in the City of London, I believe. And ANC itself was at the point of failure. They were bankrupt, and it was going to be a nothing, you know, just going to be one of those things that tried to happen and didn't, you know, a failed movement. However, a Lithuanian Jew from the Soviet Union named Joe Slovo came over and funded them. And then it just didn't end. The media kicked over. It's also important to notice that in South Africa at the time, it's kind of an analog for what's happening now in a way, because, you know, South Africa was under heavy sanctions at the time, and we had just started to have the television. And so when the media came into South Africa and the TV came into South Africa, they had the prime moment to take advantage of that situation. So they did what they normally do. You know, when townships and the police were involved in altercations, that only showed the violence from one side of the story. And the narrative began to build and build and build. And it got to the degree, you know, where you were being vilified in your own country. You were being vilified across the world. The whole world was united, you know, against Africa. And they gave you this key called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. You know, all you have to do is go through this process and all sins will be forgiven. And then you'll be okay. It'll end. The punishment and trial and the oppression of your people will end. All you have to do is give everything away. And my people took that. They took that choice. You know, the previous generation failed us.
And well, so, it's worth saying that the international media were against. I mean, they were forcing your people into that position. I mean, I was young then. I was a child then. But even I can remember what it was like. You know, the South Africa, almost those two words together, meant bad. It was reviled as a racist, white supremacist, cruel regime.
Yeah, and surprisingly, it started to seep into the culture, and people began to believe it of themselves, which is astonishing, considering the fact that, you know, at one time the rand was as equal to the strength of the pound, and the first heart transplant was done by a South African doctor, and the first attack helicopter that could do a backflip was developed by a South African. And now look at the price for our indulgence, our self-gratifying virtue signaling. Look what it's cost now. Me and all my people are wandering the globe looking for a place to stay, looking for a place to fit. Luckily, I've landed on my feet, and a few of my friends have as well. But a lot of us haven't. A lot of us are out of the frying pan and straight back into the fire. You know, that teaches you how to develop a sense of the world. You know, once you're like, I mean, my whole life, save for the few years of my childhood, but since 95, I've been living in this hellhole. You know, even before 95, we had terror attacks from the ANC in our cities and villages. And it's the same thing that happened when I came to Europe, you know, the Islamic attacks on Europe was pretty much the same thing. And it wasn't lost on me in 2016 when I came sort of onto YouTube and started to speak to Endeavor. I had an interview with him, and then they welcomed me onto Distributor's channel. And I tried to speak about this and warn against it, but I had no idea what was in store or how it would work, what the particular key would be to unlock the West, you know, and give over all of its power to these people. COVID seems to be the way that it's been done.
Yeah, it's interesting how there seems to need to be some sort of key, that's the phrase you're using. There needs to be some reason to give everything up. And yeah, in the case of South Africa, it was the vilification, the pressure, no doubt practical, what's the word? Embargoes, sort of strong arming in terms of trade and so on. I'm sure that would have gone on. It would be amazing if it didn't. But with COVID, it's been the key to make people give up their freedom, give up their rights, is health, the threat to their health, as well as the virtues of, like, well, if you don't do this, then you're a bad person. Just like if you don't give up apartheid and you don't give up South Africa, then you're a bad people.
Yeah, exactly. It's to the point where, you know, no matter what happens, they'll never give up. Like, even if COVID passes, there'll be another thing. And, you know, as I left South Africa and I came into Europe, I had to start to develop a sense of wisdom with all of this. Like, I had no, you know, becoming a man, I had no guidance. I had no, elders or wise people telling me, you know, how to judge what's true and what's false. I had to make that all up for myself. I had to start from zero and progress into it. And one of the ways that I thought to do that was to reference a lot of the mythology that was developed in among my people. I studied that. And not just that, I didn't want to study it per se just to understand the mythology. I wanted to get into the mind of the people that created that mythology. How does that benefit me? And how can I use that as some sort of guide in order to set me on the straight and narrow and do what I believe is right, or at least develop those pillars, right? So just as an example of one of those things was the death of Balder. He was the god of joy in the Scandinavian tradition, and he was slain by Hodr, the slayer. He was blind, and he was manipulated by the devious, Loki, and he was given the one very thing that could slay Balder, and he was blind and he was manipulated into doing it. So by looking into that and trying to understand that from the human perspective, I can see that what that story is trying to tell me is that the joy of the world is slain through the hands of the ignorant by the devious. And if you take that and compare it to the situation that we're in now, then it's no different. The people that are supposed to be our brethren, they're ignorant to what's going on, and they are using COVID, this very thing that's, you know, unlocking the situation from them, and they're being led to do it. And so it's very hard for me to be angry with those people, because they don't really know what they're doing.
Well, this is a big thing for those of us who are complaining, those of us who are dissidents. There's this a big issue about all of this is how to feel about those massive numbers of people who aren't dissidents, we call them the NPCs, some of them.
Yeah.
And what do you think that is a helpful or unhelpful thing to do? Yeah, presumably you think it's not fair to refer to the majority as NPCs. You go for it.
I don't really want to consider that question at all. I want to state my beliefs and I want to live by them. Come, no matter what happens, and that's all that I want to do. And you know, it's sad to me that this is happening, and I can see that people are under immense pressure. Like I've got a good friend of mine. He's trying to go and see his family for Christmas, and he's asked his mother, "Well, what would you like for Christmas?" And she said, "Oh, don't get me anything. All I want for Christmas is a vaccinated son." Like, can you imagine the kind of pressure that guy is under in order to just live and be happy among his family, that he has to throw away the things that he believes in? And that's the kind of subversive attack that we're under, is that you have to be certain in your things. You can't debate your pillars. You have to wear them as armor and move forward in the world. And no matter what happens, you don't give it up, because, you know, me, myself, and you, and all the other people, all the other dissidents, we have to rely on each other so that weakness doesn't get mined, it doesn't get attacked, that we stand shoulder to shoulder, knowing that no matter what pressure gets put in us, is that we won't crack, we won't throw away our pillars.
See, this is why I think it's essential to maintain a good atmosphere in our community, because it's so easy for people to fall out. It's so easy for them to squabble. It's so easy for people to try to one-up each other, especially with banter. But banter doesn't work in written text.
No.
Because there's no vocal intonations. People, as often as not, it just annoys and antagonizes people. I think that we need to be there for each other. And I think that anyone who can't get along with that consensus should just be fucking booted out.
Yeah, because they're
just trouble. And I've learned this over 7 years, but especially now, we can't afford people who create a bad atmosphere. And so recently I've got quite a lot more ruthless in my Telegram group, because I know it's just not worth it to entertain. There are arguments that we just don't need to have, that don't get us anywhere. What is much more important is maintaining a healthy, productive atmosphere, because otherwise, you know, who else are we going to rely on? If we can't come to our community and find solidarity and a good atmosphere, then all is lost, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. I tell you, it's critical. So the way that I see it is that, you know, we alter the environment and then the environment alters us. So our creations, in effect, guide us to our higher form, which I want to get back to later. But making sure that we create and create that interaction between us and the environment makes us who we are. It's our culture. It's an expression of genetics. And when we look into the societies that we live in at the moment, I don't see ourselves mirrored anywhere. I don't see our creations anywhere. I don't see any effects of us being here at all. All we do is live in this virtual reality and keep ourselves to ourselves. And in effect, we've abstracted ourselves out of reality. And so that's hard for me to deal with. You know, what kind of a people don't appear in their own culture in any form?
Oh, it's and this is something that's becoming very intense. You know, it was bad enough 5 years ago, and I remember doing videos then about this. You know, the TV adverts that it was a foreign country, a foreign people that you would see. You know, everyone's in a mixed race relationship and so on. But now I think it's much worse. And the artifacts from the past, our history, are being erased from the media and even from our cityscapes.
Yeah,
so, you know, the
physically destroyed. Yeah, physically destroyed. I've seen an article about a museum in Canada that is having some of its exhibits completely destroyed, but nothing to replace it, just destroyed.
So it's unbelievable.
But what is actually going on here? So if we have a look at it, like I said before, culture is an expression of genetics. This is what I believe. Okay, so when we express ourselves and we create things, it's like signaling our fitness, our sexual fitness amongst each other, right? And when that disappears, all those genes that are expressed when you create something are now nullified. So our race cannot evolve. All our signals that we're supposed to send in order for us to be recognized as fit have vanished. That's why things are so fucked between men and women, is because, you know, we're supposed to create the environment for each other to resonate in and see each other. But we're completely blind to that. All those evolutionary signals of fitness are gone. So it's like some kind of soft genocide. Like I'm not even joking about that or using it as a shocking term, but that's the state of play. So we need to create physical things. If you're like carve, make metalwork, something to express yourself for the world out there. It's like a ripple. Everything that you create is a ripple of you, and interacting with those things, you know, it gets into the minds, into the hearts of others, and you start to form bonds and develop thoughts based on the things that you see. I mean, we're pattern recognition machines, and when we see things of ourselves out there, it's like an affirmation. You know, we can sit here and we can think about things all the time, but just speaking out loud, speaking your beliefs out loud, it's like creates a physical effect. You can hear the sound waves. It's a physical thing. And, you know, just moving more and more into digital spaces, having more and more of our signals taken away, we're just dying, you know?
With regard to the statues being taken down and in some cases destroyed, in America, Britain, and I'm sure elsewhere as well, are there echoes of South Africa in that? I'm sure that kind of thing would have happened there.
Oh yes, of course. Streets were renamed. You know, you can't discuss certain things. You know, history itself became a racist act. You know, they wanted to. I don't know if you can remember. It might have even been around 2016. Is that? They wanted to decolonize science. That was a thing that was started in South African universities. They were rioting, burning down works of art, you name it. It was like ISIS in the Middle East, you know, just the same kind of wanton destruction, just erasing a certain people from the state of the earth. And it's important to recognize, okay, the entire world teamed up to decide that there was no place for a white homeland. That's what they did to South Africa. Imagine if South Africa existed now, with all this pressure everywhere else. It could very well easily be relieved by moving to South Africa, but that was not allowed. It was destroyed. It was destroyed, and it was the dress rehearsal for the main event, which we're now currently sitting through. And so it's important for us to steel ourselves and to develop inner strength and will, because this is a battle of will more than anything else. And we have to start to develop those things in order to go out there and deal with what's to come. If this is anything like what happened to me in South Africa, because in the next 10, 15 years, if this continues in the way that it does, and it follows the same path that South Africa followed, we are not ready. We're trapped in a state of adolescence. We are unable to attain our higher selves. We have our role models completely taken away from us, but we don't even understand what the points of role models are anymore. Just on that point, if I may, it's going to sound cringy, but it's not as cringy as you think. Like this whole awakening that I went through in myself in order to know myself and develop my character and wear it as a creation of myself and express it out into the world, rather than just, you know, form an identity. Because, you know, when you replace identity with ideology, any kind of criticism becomes a personal attack. And then that renders debate useless. It'll just widen the divide because nobody will be able to see past that insult. But I read Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, and I know that's going to sound like mega cringe-worthy, but hear me out. The first book, the first chapter especially, where he goes among all his the people that he's known in his life, and he praises them for certain aspects of their character. What he's actually doing is praising himself, because he has understood that he's found these attributes in other people that he thinks are good. They've resonated with him to some degree. And to me, this is our higher selves calling back out to us. So if we recognize these virtues in others, that's us, you know, telling us that this is an aspect of my higher form and it's something for me to strive towards. And so that's how you use your role models and you develop into this higher self. And when you look at European paganism, a lot of the gods are in fact characteristics or attributes of humanity, like might or strength or wisdom or you know, whatever the case may be. And these are taught to us so that we can start to identify these key points and then grow out of adolescence into our higher form, which I think, you know, is discovered through interacting with each other and by finding our role models. And why this is important to me is that it doesn't matter how your role models get slandered, because it doesn't even matter if they've failed as human beings or they've let you down, but you've identified that key characteristic of them that you have resonated with. And that is your future self calling out to you. And that's the path for you to grow in. So, you know, you can think of Jordan Peterson as somewhat of a leader for young men, but I think he's leading them astray, cleaning your room, tidying yourself up. It just makes the machines easier to harvest you. It's not what it's about. It's developing this higher form and then expressing it out to the world so other people can see it and develop themselves as well.
I think it would be useful to talk about what you've used the term adolescent, that we are in an adolescent state, and that we need to ascend from that to a higher state. That I think that it's fairly obvious what you mean by adolescent. You mean that we're not children, but we still have childish attributes. We just happen to also have sexual proclivities or a sex drive, but in a lot of ways, we're still in a childlike, selfish state. Would you like to elaborate on that, and then how that differs from a higher state?
Exactly that. Okay, so a lot of the things that we're struggling with, like how do I put it? The weaknesses that we have, the way that we think, everything is how I remember, like I remember you saying it in another stream of yours, like the culture stopped 20 years ago. Like it's the same thing. We're trapped in a stage where we're so safe that we cannot grow through adversity. And that adversity is something that's required in order to survive the crucible, to develop strength. And because we're so weak, we just give responsibility to every agency that's offering it. And that's what I mean by trapped in adolescence. It means being irresponsible. We're not responsible for our safety. We're not responsible for our education. We're not responsible for our mental health. We're not responsible for our security. So what are we actually responsible for? We're children being cared for by a parent, and that parent is the state. And as long as we're trapped in that paradigm, like Computing Forever said before, we're in an abusive relationship. And until we actualize as adults and take responsibility back for all aspects of our life, I call it perfect responsibility, then you'll be able to, you know, at least decide for yourself where to go, how to go, and what to do, how to think.
Yeah, I think you're right that adversity is, I mean, and this is a thing that's come up before quite a lot, that we are now so pampered that we don't have opportunities to grow up. I mean, even when you enter the workplace today, it's very streamlined, it's all very formalized, everything, you're really just told what to do. And then if any disputes come up, the human resource department comes in and sorts them out for you. So time and again, there aren't these opportunities for growth, for personal growth and learning about yourself and learning to discipline yourself. you learn to obey rules. You don't learn how to discipline yourself, which is a different thing.
Yeah, in the same vein, you learn what to think. You don't learn how to think at school. I mean, I could even tell you now, all my friends that have taken the vaccine versus all the friends that haven't, it's split directly according to who went to university and who didn't. It's exactly the same thing mirrored across society in every avenue. Like I've often said to friends of mine, the first stage to losing the sovereignty in the UK was through the health and safety people. As soon as you gave them that, that was it. It's all downhill from there.
That is interesting. Obviously, we can bemoan the situation, but I think that you're very active and proactive. So would you like to talk about ways that people can fight against this? Obviously, there is the group, the communal thing, but I think more important, at least initially, is the individual, personal thing. How can people help themselves?
Well, we've heard the story, strong men create good times create weak men create bad times. We understand that connection, right? We also understand that we have an interaction with the environment where the environment can shape us accordingly. So if we want to shape ourselves in a certain way, we can alter our environment to help us get to that goal. If we understand these two things and we think about what we want to do in terms of becoming strong men and never letting bad things happen, while in good times we can engineer events or trials for us to go through in order to maintain both us as strong men, but also keep us aware of how bad things can get, you know, through these trials, so that things don't have to get into that Weimar state era. If you have a look at tribes, or any society that's got a very, very stable for like 2,000 years, you're going to look at the people in the Amazon. And I think the reason why they're so stable is because they have initiation, a very, very painful initiation. And that puts you like very, very, you've got lots of skin in the game. You've got a connection between all these people that was developed through some kind of traumatic experience. So what I've done with a lot of my brothers in Europe is that I've taken them on like expeditions with 10 items or less into the Alps in the middle of winter for like 2 weeks at a time. And certainly going through that is in times, you know, a life and death struggle. You can see, you know, one step in the wrong direction, that's the end of it. And that's something that's very important for us to realize, you know, to start to see things in those terms, to see what reality truly is, you know, free of the safety nets that we live in. And, you know, it's been really, really helpful for a lot of these guys. A few of them, when I met, they were struggling with women. They were unable to do much in society. They were reclusive. But through this, they've developed a sense of calm in themselves and a confidence in themselves, knowing that they can do certain things and they understand who they are. They've also connected to ancient peoples of Europe because they've walked, you know, in the same places that they did with similar equipment and have experienced a similar experience. So they've got that connection to the past and they've developed themselves into stronger people, and they go forth into the world and it's a net positive. So not everybody has access to the Alps to do that sort of thing, but you get the picture. You can artificially generate these trials in order to develop You know, create that the crucible for yourself and pass through.
So this is it's interesting because I wrote something on Telegram. I never published it because it ended up being far too long-winded. But it's difficult to say it briefly. But it seems to me that it's difficult to create a man. I think that girls become women quite naturally, whereas boys become men through trial and sacrifice and struggle.
Yeah. I mean, everything in our society and the way that we see it as men is corrupt. Like we get told to forgive, but we don't forgive. We allow for redemption. See, redemption is something that's earned, not something that can be asked for or given. Like, that's the first thing. The second thing is, what has true value to a man? What are the most valuable things? And those are the things that you can't give away, things that can't be taken from you, only given away rather. So that's honor and that's integrity. These are things that should be the most valuable above all else to you because it can never be taken and only given. Once you understand these things and you have to have an empathic view of the future and the past so that you don't end up in that same vein of consuming the future for the comforts of the present. And you start to see that, you know, you want to judge yourself as a man, not by your peers, but by the greatest. You know, you don't want to just be beating the man to the left or right of you. You want to create a legacy. You want to be compared to, you know, the greats of our culture. And that drives you forward rather than just trying to, you know, have the same flashy car as the next person next to you.
It also frees you from petty rivalry, like caring about what the next guy along is. Does he have a bigger car than you or have you beaten him? That's not as important as have you become the best man that you could be.
I completely agree. And you see people fall into the same cliche mistakes over and over and over again. You know, they get themselves a good business, but they can't keep away from the ladies. You know, it's these things that you see in, you know, in movies across the board. You're like, even in movies like Goodfellas, you can see the cliches are there. It's obvious what to avoid, but people can't help themselves. Like they're so trapped by their emotions because they haven't gone through things enough to realize that those emotions are just just the wave, and you are the buoy that floats up and down it. It's a thing that happens to you. It's not who you are.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. This is something where your appetites can get the better of you because you haven't mastered them. It's a very easy thing to say that you've got to be in control of yourself, but actually doing that is really difficult. I mean, you know, I struggle to give up Coca-Cola, for example. But I know that you can do it because I gave up smoking in an instant. It was very, very quickly and easily. So I know that you can do it. It's just a matter of summing up the willpower. Like willpower is a mysterious thing. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, that's what I said before. More than anything, this is a battle of wills. You know, they're going to tempt you with you know, everything that you want, everything that you feel that you're entitled to, while taking it away at the same time. And they're going to cudgel you into doing that. And they'll give you opportunities. They'll give you opportunities. I say, oh, just admit to this, like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. Just admit to the bad things you've done and all will be forgiven. But those people are getting beaten with that cudgel that they just freely offered up to this day, I tell you. So you have to develop that will. And the way that you do that is like this, right? How do you judge yourself? I judge myself from the perspective of the future as how I perform as a bridge for the values of the past to cross the breadth of time. And I understand that you can't have legacy without sacrifice to lifestyle. And so when you put those two things as pillars, the net result is that you have to have that will to forego certain things so that you can achieve that end. Otherwise, you're a hypocrite. Otherwise, you're a failure. Otherwise, you can't count yourself as an enlightened human being. You're just like everybody else.
So it's about leaving a legacy for the future.
Yes, yeah. It's not just about leaving a legacy for the future, but understanding what the implications of that is, that you have to sacrifice aspects of your lifestyle in order to attain that. You can't have it both ways. And if you're empathetic with the future, if you see the future as something pure and innocent that you want to protect, that you want your heritage and traditions to pass through, then you have to behave a certain way in order to do that.
And I suppose it's also this idea of taking responsibility for the future. Again, I think we've learned to be very passive. This is something that people aren't consciously aware of. It's the thing that they're inducted into is to be very passive. Whereas I think in the past, especially in a country like South Africa, 100 years ago or 150 years ago, I think probably every man knew that the future really did depend on him. Where no one feels like that in the modern world.
No. And more than that, they created that. Their legacy was something that they sweat for and bled for. But we don't feel that way here. It doesn't seem to me. Like, I can't imagine a world where, like, the way that things have happened, just in the UK, for example, I can't imagine that being the case. Yet it has, and that's something that's taken a long time for me to try and get my head around. Why somebody would just open the gates up in that way, and I think it's just because they don't feel tied to their land. They've been divorced from it. They don't have spirit in the game anymore.
Yeah, the range of ways in which we are unhealthy is quite daunting. You know, when you think of all these different things, I mean, I think this is why it's very important for people like us to remember that as much as we have to analyze this stuff, we also have to offer real or try to come up with real solutions. So would you have anything to, or do you want to talk more about the contrast between COVID and apartheid, or have you said all you want to say on that?
I mean, the two situations mirror themselves quite well, you know. You just having your freedom taken away from you for a very, very short-term ease of pain. And I think that's a very negative way to persist. And I think that the only way to survive that is to outlast it. And I think that COVID was sprung a bit too early because, you know, it was a perfect opportunity. And these people are getting old, you know. They're running out of time and they jumped in it too soon. I think the migration thing was the first attack, but you know, Britain in particular was very resilient to that, which I applaud it for. And then you know, seeing as that didn't work, they jumped on this bandwagon, and they're just running out of time, so they're going to put everything that they can behind it, and it's only going to get worse from here. So I don't really have much more to say on that. Just that, you know, the only way to survive is to outlast, is to have kids and raise them with your traditions in mind and be fearless about doing that. I've got to
go ahead. Just could you go into why you think they're running out of time?
Because they're getting old and they don't reproduce. They reproduce through stealing our children and indoctrinating them. So if you raise your kids, you know, in a homeschooling environment, and you find like-minded people, and you make small hamlets, and you redevelop a parallel society, then you have a chance to succeed, and then you're going to have to deal with the demographics battle after that. But these people don't produce children. You can't produce children when you're, you know, transitioning, so to speak. So as long as we can continue to produce children, we'll outlast them. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that as long as there's only one of us left walking these lands, you know, with our traditions and values in mind, you know, one man and one woman, we can start. And I won't accept defeat until that line has been crossed.
Right. It's an interesting idea because I think a lot of people feel that our enemies, our opponents, the globalists, the nihilists, have infinite time, but there have been several people on Millennial this year who have said that no, it's the opposite. They've accelerated their plans because they're running out of time, and because they are actually in a very brittle. Yeah, they're authoritarian and intolerant now because they are in a fragile state.
Yeah, they've had to gamble, and I think they've overreached. And that's why I worry that unless we're strong and we can survive their prods and their pressures, then they're just gonna give up. I mean, even the people like Sargon, and they're not going along with it. You know, nobody's really buying into it too much. And all the people that are, you know, they're not the kind that reproduce, I don't think. So it's, you know, don't whatever you do, don't put your kids in university, and then you know, just have as many kids as possible.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people will balk at, but you know, and I know that if someone had said to me, don't go to university, don't go for that, miss out on that experience, I would have had serious, you know, FOMO. I would felt like I was missing out. And I know that I can imagine a parent today having to deal with a 17-year-old who is determined to go with their friends to university. And the parents struggling to say, look, I know it sounds good, and I know it sounds like a lot of fun, and I know it sounds that they're telling you that you've got to do this, otherwise you won't even have a future, you won't have a career, but they are poisoning you, and I'm not letting you go to university.
Yeah, I think that conversation has to start a lot younger than when they're 17. You have to raise them in your tradition, in your culture. You know, they are extensions of you. They are you walking through time. They are your immortality, and you have to see them in that way, teach them or show them the importance of maintaining those traditions and values across time, because that's what we are. You know, our whole culture is built on understanding that there are times of plenty and times of harvest and times of struggle, and getting them to see it from that perspective, they can sort of understand, yes, okay, maybe I'll sacrifice this or I'll sacrifice that, but there's so much more to benefit from. And besides, if you're diligent and active, like you're saying before, you know, passive, there's two ways of living, and parenting as well, active parenting or passive parenting. If you're just passive and run them through the system and don't take responsibility for their education or even their entertainment, for example, then they're going to end up in a certain way. But if you're active with them and you raise them, like my wife is currently pregnant. We're going to give birth in the spring, which is going to be amazing. And our baby is going to be going with us throughout our life and everything that we do. When we go walking, when we climb mountains, when we're working, that baby is going to be a part of us, and it's going to know our lives, and it's going to know how we are, and it's going to experience things through that lens. And I think that's going to make a huge difference when it comes down the line. I mean, who knows what it's going to be like in 10 years or 15 years when babies at that age where higher education is something that we need to consider. But, you know, I think that's going to be dealt with far in advance. You know, I'm going to be letting my child listen to me read the History of England by David Hume. You know, that's going to capture her heart and mind, no doubt, like it did mine. And these kind of things are going to set her up to not need the university or the feedback from her friends, or the acceptance from her friends or her peers for just complying in the way that they are. I think if you develop your character strong enough, then that speaks for itself, and you become one of the special people in this world. You know, we can't believe like the left, who thinks that everybody's special, and neither can we become heartless or spiritless and believe that nobody's special. You know, there are some of us who are, and how that's determined is our character. And so I think focusing on raising our children in terms of developing their character, being active in that regard, I think will pay dividends for their child, and then they won't worry too much about university or going or not going, or if they're having a good time or anything like that.
Yeah, of course, it would have to start sooner than 17. That was I probably didn't think that question through before asking it. Obviously, you would want to be shaping them from a very young age so that they weren't even thinking in those terms. But I guess the practical question that comes up then is, well, what what I mean, this is just it's a bit of a diversion, but we'll get back to what we were saying. If you don't want your kid to go to university, then what kind of career would you do you want them to have? Because a lot of people would say that by not allowing your child to go to university, you're cutting them off from a lot of employment.
I disagree with that entirely. I haven't been to university myself, but I've had a very, very rich career that's seen me live and work in three continents. I've visited and worked in over 38 other countries. I've worked to a very high degree in security and an aspect of security where I've dealt with a lot of the three letter agencies of the world in a capacity. And so I wouldn't even think that they would be sacrificing job opportunities. I think if you can develop them and understand them and what they want to do in life and how they and what kind of character they are and marry them to a role in society, then I think you can start to get that ball rolling, like again at an early age, and get them through what they need in order to be that. So I don't agree that by withholding them from university, that's going to sacrifice them in any way. I mean, unless they want to get into STEM. But even in that regard, you know, a lot of genius people are all self-taught anyway. So I wouldn't hold any weight in that argument at all.
Yeah, that's really it's good to hear that. Is it, you're an example of somebody who didn't and doesn't need university in order to make a successful life. Because again, it's something that is just in the ether that, well, if you've not got a degree, then you're not going to have a life.
Yeah. And anyway, man, we need to ask ourselves the two very simple questions, when it comes to the world that we live in. Does this benefit us in any way, or does it benefit our heritage or our children in any way? And if the answer is then no, then scrap it. That's how ruthless you need to be. If in terms of this COVID thing, does taking the jab benefit me or benefit my children? No, then who does it benefit? It's not for me, so then it's out. I don't need to sit and debate 10 hours with 10 scientists or any of that crap. It's bullshit. Chuck it out. Don't argue things that are impossible by definition to answer. Stop wasting time on that crap. Just look at it from a pure practical sense. What is my goal? My goal is to raise children to carry on the torch that I bear into the next generation, and for them to do the same. I don't care about advances in technology. I don't care about any of that. None of that serves me. That is my prime directive. Things beyond that, we can talk, but we have to start being ruthless and cutting away things that don't benefit us. I mean, look at the societies that we live in. It's not for us. It's not for us in any capacity. How are we served? How are we served? How are we represented? I don't see myself being represented by anyone, anywhere, in any party. Do you know what I mean? Like all I can do is focus on my family and build my family, and then hopefully, shine enough of the light in the way that I live my life so that other people follow suit.
When you said, how does this society serve us? It made me think of this hellish image, which I'm going to put on screen now. And this emerged about 4 or 5 months ago. It's when I first saw it. I'd like to hear what you would say about this image.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, isn't that sad? When I think of my people, I think about castles. I think about intricate carved designs. I think about beautiful, tree-lined avenues. When I think about guards, like that soldier there, I don't think about them in that sense at all. I think about them in livery, carrying a flag, being proud of them, or representing something. But that is just a hollow, soulless. It makes me sad.
It's a nightmare.
And we're in a dystopia, and we've been in a dystopia for a long time.
And I don't want to, I'm not showing this image so as to marinate in the dystopia. I just want us to acknowledge it and talk about why is it that we need to escape from this? I do believe that this is the world that they want for, globalism wants. This is the world that the oligarchs want. This is what it all points to. It's a fast food global conglomerate with defended by a soldier who is not a soldier in any real sense, in any proper sense, in any I wouldn't be surprised if he's not that brave. I mean, if he's doing that job, that is not going to require much guts. It's no. It's like the worst. It's the lowest form of soldiering. It's the lowest form of defense. And then you've got the customer outside with the mask on, and he's fat as hell. And then, of course, you've got the advert with a black guy. So, again, this is a white world, but it's been given over. The future of it is non-white. I mean, in every way, it's incredible how much is encapsulated in this image.
It's absurd.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's been photoshopped. I think this is a real photo. But either way, it's emblematic.
You just need to walk down a high street and you'll be able to see that mirrored more or less everywhere.
Yeah.
To some degree or other.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's profoundly unhealthy. And this is the world that we live in today. Of course, we need to build something else. I'll take it away now. There you go.
Look, you've got to look at how much energy is needed to input into the system for it to be sustainable. Like the endless amount of indoctrination, the endless amount of programming, the endless amount of gaslighting, the endless amount of finances that are being expended just to prop up this one idea of multiculturalism. That in itself is enough to know that it's bullshit. Truth doesn't need immense energy to self-sustain. Not at all. So when you see things like that, you know, when this COVID thing first happened and I saw some of my more hefty colleagues at work asking me about health and this and that, I'm like, is this fat person honestly expecting me to care about their health when they're being fat right in front of me? Like it blew my mind that they would even have the gall to do that. But there they were, you know, standing there, demanding that I care about their health when they clearly don't. So when I saw that, you know, right at the beginning, I thought, you know what, until these people start showing some kind of responsibility of their own health, I couldn't give a shit. I'm not going to do anything to protect them.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose we can head towards an end now. Would you like to give some advice, some tips for the ways that people could get started in regenerating themselves, things for them to do and things for them to avoid, and ways of being, ways of thinking that they should avoid, ways of thinking that they should adopt?
Yeah, so the first thing that I'd say is to seek out role models, whether it's real or fictional or non-fictional. It doesn't really matter. The point is that you identify aspects of human characteristics that you enjoy and then start to move towards embodying that characteristic, and then moving to another one and so on and so forth, and starting to develop yourself as a higher form. Once you've done that and you've developed yourself as a character, you feel like you have a responsibility in life. You know, it gives you at least it gives you some kind of drive or some kind of goal to get you started. Also, don't fall for this whole individualism thing. Just as an aside, where I live in Italy, I've got a farm out there. And on one side of the property, there's an indigenous wood. And on the other side, it's a managed wood. And the emergent properties of the two are vastly different, as you can imagine. And if you look at them, you know, at a very, very close-up point, you see that they're both individual trees and you can't tell much of a difference. But when you're focused on individuality in the Jordan Peterson sense, when you're just cleaning up your room and you're tidying up your life, but you're not really doing anything beyond that, you're just making yourself more of a perfect tree to be harvested for whatever it is. You know what I mean? So don't worry too much about the state of your room when there's much more important things to deal with. Try to develop strength, develop groups of people that are willing to go out with you into nature and face hardships that way. Set trials for yourself and think more deeply about things. Like, I think it's sad that we're stuck in a position where, you know, we're championed for not masturbating for a month. I think that's pathetic. And so we need to start seeing those things in those terms and understand what it means to be stoic and the value of stoicism. Again, like I'm going to be railing on Jordan Peterson until the day that I die, because that guy's done so much damage for men in the world. But if you get to a point where you feel like you have to cry, okay, hold that shit in. The tear of a man is a signal to everyone around him to know that things are so bad that he's reached that point. That's a signal for them to know that, okay, this is as bad as it gets. So until it gets to that point, don't fucking do it. You know, you've got a responsibility to the people around you not to do that. Maintain and do what you need to do in your own quiet time. There are no excuses, justified or otherwise. You know, it doesn't matter if, like for me in my situation in South Africa, it doesn't matter what excuses the previous generation had for doing what they did. What matters is the result. They sold our country and they sold my birthright. So never fall into the situation where you're starting to believe in the excuses that you give to yourself. Because before you lie to others, most of the time you're lying to yourself first. So swear an oath of honesty, at least to yourself, and start to develop pillars of belief, pillars that you're prepared to fight for. And then I guess from there, things will start to sort themselves out and then head into the world, multiply and be fruitful.
Okay. Well, I mean that's very good advice. Is there anything you'd like to say about just for the sake of it? I'm curious how you would characterize Jordan Peterson and his influence on young men, because you said that he'd done a lot of damage.
Yeah. So the way that I see it, right, that guy came about in the perfect time where we were having our sort of Arab Spring. You know, we were all gaining consciousness, we were all uniting under a goal, and then he came in and subverted that into taking care of our own lives individually and completely broke that momentum. Like, whether he intended it or not, that guy has a lot to answer for, because that energy that we had going could have been, if he had led instead of just squandered that opportunity or that responsibility that I believe he was given, then things could have been different right now. We could have been in a much more stronger position to deal with what's going on than what we are now. I think that whether he intended or not, that guy had a huge opportunity, and he was he is still seen as a leader among many, many young men, and that he needs to take that responsibility seriously and start to consider them a little bit more than he does himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually proud of what he's done. You know, he explicitly said that. In fact, I think he said that the thing he's proudest of is that he warded lots of young men away from nationalism.
That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I mean, why? I don't even understand why this thing of our leaders being so old comes from anyway. Like, they're so disjointed from reality. All their life energy is more or less spent. Like, we need leaders who are still got strength, you know, still got spirit, not these old broken men. Honestly, this meme of presidents and leaders having to be like 70 or 80 is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, and this is an American thing where the guy who becomes president is invariably an old man, and I think it is a weakness of the American system. Now, as for Jordan Peterson, it's not so much his age, because I don't think he's that old. I think he's weak. I think it's just his nature. I think he's a very feminine guy and a neurotic guy. I don't think he's... I struggle to see anything about him that is masculine.
Yeah, which is ironic considering he's like the one go-to that a lot of people will say that as a masculine leader, or at least as one, you know, setting the stereotype or the archetypes of people. Forcing them into roles.
Yeah,
you know?
It's very unhealthy. I mean, we could rail on Jordan Peterson all night. I could as well. You know, I hate him as well. Well, I don't hate him. I find him exasperating, and I hate what he has done.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think that his influence is starting to wane for various reasons of credibility, but also the times are changing. His individualism is not in keeping with either the Great Reset, which I see as collectivist, or the response to the Great Reset, nationalism, which is also collectivist. So his individualism is, it's very 2017 at this point, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it doesn't stand the test of time too well, does it? When faced with such a huge thing that's coming for us, like that isn't going to serve anyone. And you know, in the test of the fire, his weak blade is going to melt and fracture, no doubt about that. And then hopefully we'll be able to see men coming into their own again.
Yeah. Okay, is there anything else you'd like to say before we end?
No, just a thank you. You know, I'm pretty much unknown in these parts, and you know, coming on to the show is one of the things I've always wanted to do. So that's a huge tick in the box for me. So much appreciated for that opportunity, man.
Oh, that's fine. You're welcome. And I hope it does drive more people to your channel so that you can help more people. Bain of Crenshaw asked, what became of the English South Africans? Did they betray your people and just leave? What are their historical origins and trajectory, the English South Africans?
So the English followed the Dutch down there, and they wanted to make war for diamonds and gold, and they had their interactions. But then after that period, you know, they settled there. I come from the province of Natal, which is English descended. And to answer the question, I mean, a lot of them moved to New Zealand and Australia, where they're really feeling the pressure. And a lot of them came back to the UK and just all over the world in general. So we sort of a lost people at this point.
Right, okay. Any tips on how to overcome PE? I'm ashamed to admit I'm a bit of a two-pump chump. I don't know what this person, but I don't know what PE refers to. Do you
premature know? Ejaculation, my friend.
Oh, right, okay. Okay.
Endurance. I know a friend of mine called Will. He's a very, very strong long-distance runner. Always ask him, like, because he does, like, ultra-marathons and crap like that. So always ask him, like, how do you set your pace? How do you know if you're running fast enough or not? He said, if he thinks about sex while he's running and he manages to get a boner, then he's not running fast enough. And he says that has helped him in that regard. So do some running, build your endurance, and I think you'll be all right. Otherwise, use some medicine or something.
Okay. I don't know why that person asked this question, but there we go. When I put up that photo earlier, someone said he's guarding the American embassy. No. I think that's a reference to McDonald's.
Yeah.
Okay. Either that, or it's a photo where the American embassy is right next door to McDonald's, and I don't know. Either way, it's a grim image. So yeah. Okay. Well, let's leave it there. Oh, I should just check entropy. Someone has linked to your Odyssey channel in the comments. So hopefully people will be able to follow you there. Oh, here's an interesting question just to end on. Is Stoicism a philosophy that enough people can really follow to make a difference to the world?
You know, evil, in my opinion, is spread through its victims. And if you're going to continue that vein, and if you're going to talk about your problems, and if you're going to continue to put that negativity out of yourself back into the world, it creates this huge ocean of shit that everyone, this kind of miasma that everyone has to deal with. So if enough people are stoic and keep that negativity in them and process it and not pass it on and use it as a justification to further do more evil, then I think, yes, it can make a huge difference.
All right. Okay, well, Elder, thank you very much for appearing on Millennial.
Thank you very much, mate. And I have to say, it's an absolutely fantastic tradition that I look forward to every single year. So thanks for that.
Oh, keep you're it welcome. I will certainly try to. This one seems to have gone well. I mean, people are... And I feel like it's gone well. So, yeah.
Well, it would be great to get people together, you know, in person as well. That would be amazing.
That would be... That's another matter. And that's something that... We have looked into, I've looked into, it's very difficult because of the massive threat of infiltration and people getting photographed.
Just sorry to interrupt you there. That's a great, great point. Infiltration. And that's something that we suffer from hugely. One of the thoughts that I had on that just briefly, which has helped me in my own personal life, is that you have to initiate people into your worldview. I mean, if you have a look at leftists, if you have a look at cults, or if you have a look at any tradition, every one of them has initiation process. And if you make it difficult enough, it's very hard for somebody to go through if they don't believe. And so we need some kind of initiation rites. And I think that's part of human culture and that needs to be brought back.
All right. Okay. Well, Elder, thanks very much. I'll be in an hour with Pale Hominid and Reactionary Expat. So I will see you then. Bye-bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.